So when did our culture die? It did die, or at least it radically changed. It's not what I remember. It's not like when I was young. That's what we're going to talk about today here on Free For All Friday. Welcome to the Council of Trent. Mondays and Wednesdays, we talk apologetics and theology, but Friday, you know, we just talk about whatever I want to talk about. Whatever I want to talk about. It's just a fun time for me to unwind and share with you my thoughts. And if you like it, great. If you're not a fan of these episodic elements, feel free to skip over that. Watch and listen to all other kinds of good things. I think it was last month, Matt Walsh did an episode on his show talking about when culture died. And it really hit me because these are thoughts that I have been having for a long time, for years, trying to put everything together. And he put it all together really well, like putting it all together, saying, oh, yeah, our culture really changed and for the worse. And it's just really not enjoyable. So I want to talk about that. Special message, by the way, to my Gen Z listeners, especially those who are listening to the podcast still. Who listen to the audio podcast to Free For All Friday Elements, usually consume media, I feel like, more on YouTube, YouTube Shorts, TikTok, maybe not as many podcast listeners out there, but there are some, and I appreciate that. And what I want to say to Gen Z, which, by the way, is what makes you Gen Z? People always talk about what makes different generations. I define generations by generational events. And so if you remember certain events and you belong to that generation. So in order to be Gen X, you got to remember where you were when the Challenger exploded. I was 1 year old, so I'm not Gen X. But I remember where I was when 9/11 happened. All right, I was in my room waking up because I was on the West Coast and finding out that, you know, I woke up basically. It was like 6:30 in the morning for us when the attacks are happening. My dad turns on the cable box to watch TV. And we're just watching. I spent the rest of the day at school. We just watched TV the whole day at school, seeing what was going on. It got repetitive. Some teachers wanted to turn it off, but we weren't in a mood to really do anything. If you do not remember 9/11, you are not a millennial. You are not a millennial. You say, well, I was born in, you know, I'm a millennial. I was born in 1998. No, sorry. You are one of the older you're one of the older Gen Z crowd. But a lot of Gen Z now, I mean, are people born like 2000, born after 9/11, 2002. So every generation has a generational defining event. I've talked about this before. I promise I'll get to when culture dies. We have to talk about what unites. You remember things about culture. So before Gen X, so Gen X is Challenger. I'd say baby boomers. Baby boomers all remember where they were when man walked on the moon at the end of the 60s. So they remember that, obviously. So what would be Gen Z defining event? Because we also have Gen Alpha coming up, right? Gen Alpha are the newest kiddos. They are the children of millennials. And Gen Z are the children of Gen X. Gen Z, I would put their cutoff date around being born 2012, 2013. And here's the next one. In the difference between Gen Z and Gen Alpha, you're Gen Z if you remember where you were when Donald Trump was elected president. I really think that that's a good one for a marker for Gen Z. So if you don't remember that, maybe you were born in 2015 or you were born in 2012. That would make you now, I guess, 13 years old. You're a Gen Alpha kid. You're in something way different than what Gen Z had. So Gen Z, I'm going to place that really people who were born like 1998 to like 2012 is where I put it. Which is hard because that is the period where I think culture died. And there's a specific date, and I agree with Matt Walsh on this, what the date is. And the date is June 29th, 2007. June 29th, 2007, when culture died. It didn't die immediately, of course, on the eyes immediately, but that's where things start going downhill. And within the next 2 years, you start to see things radically change and not really for the better. So what happened June 29th, 2007? That was the public debut of the iPhone, when the iPhone became available for purchase. It was announced back in January, but the iPhone was the new big thing. People were lining up to get that iPhone, and it killed BlackBerry. Because before iPhone, and there's a great film about this, look up BlackBerry film online, it talks about the rise of BlackBerry. And I remember, so my generation, what phones did I got? I think the very first phone I had was a Cricket. I just had like a Sprint Cricket phone, the little green screen, playing snakes on it, went to a Palm Trio. I had a BlackBerry for a while. I didn't get an iPhone. I think I got like an iPhone 5 maybe. It took me a while to get to the iPhone. But I remember having a BlackBerry, and people call them Crackberries because you go, and people love the keyboard. But what killed BlackBerry was that the phone, the keyboard is on the screen. So when you're not using the keyboard, you got a big screen. You can watch stuff. Now, was there anything to watch? No, not really. You could take video. It was okay. Not great. But you have a camera. You could record decent video and pictures on there. And then and you could use it to browse the internet. But that, you know, it would take another few years for that to really pick up. But that really, it changed. It changed so many things at that moment. The ability to have a television and a computer in our pockets to walk around. That was one, and it was followed up a year later, November 4th, 2008, Barack Obama gets elected. The perfect storm, all of this comes together. And the big thing that Walsh points out in his episode, and that I agree with, is that after like 2008, we lost our monoculture and we started veering more into a liberal great awakening. All of that put together made things just absolutely awful. So what I said about Gen Z, by the way, a message for Gen Z, because you were born, if you're a Gen Z, you were born, let's say, at the latest 1998, but probably around, let's say, you know, like 2000, 1999, maybe 2002, 2003. I graduated high school in 2003. You didn't get to have the childhood I had. I had one of the best childhoods. I mean, not me personally, but my generation. And that's something I always will look back fondly on and enjoyed to look at. And I grieve. I feel really, really, really sad for Gen Z. They did not get to have the childhood that I got to have. It's awful. Like to compare it. So, I mean, for myself growing up, when these technological advances happen, right? I remember actually, so it's not just the iPhone too. There's a lot that changes when we move to an isolated individualistic culture. The iPhone is released June 29th, 2007. Facebook in September of 2006, that is when Facebook opened up to everybody over the age of 13 with an email address. Prior to that, because I remember using Facebook in college as it was meant for in 2004. I signed up for that. Yeah, I did sign up for it, though I was at Scottsdale Community College, home of the Fighting Artichokes, but I still had a Facebook profile. I'm pretty sure I had one back then. Because they had it at different schools. I think by then, even at a community college, you could get it. I definitely had it by the time I was at ASU. I went to Arizona State University in 05. So if I didn't have it in 04, I would have gotten it. I think I joined in 06, but it was before it went public. I had my ASU email address, and so I had a Facebook. And that was just for college students to connect with each other. And we were still in our own little bubble. It wasn't open for everybody else. But it changes. So in 2005, YouTube launches. By the time you get to 2007, YouTube is mainstream. By the way, Pornhub, I didn't realize this, it launched in May of 2007. And the avalanche of pornography in the 2010s is just awful. I feel so bad for Gen Z having to go through that. We had pornography, obviously, you know, everybody generation has it. And we had internet, but internet pornography was not as rampant and awful. Usually you were afraid to look at it because you were worried you were going to get like a virus. It's just like it was an unregulated Wild West, skeezy stuff. I mean, you could still find it, but it was not monetized by large corporations to be as addictive as it is today. Instagram launches in October 6, 2010. Twitter started in like 06, but it took a few years for Twitter to catch on. You're like Twitter, X, as people call it now. In about 2009, 2010, it becomes mainstream. So the thing was like my childhood, so just comparing it to all of that, you know, going back in time, what was my childhood? The earliest memories I have as a child, I think I was like 5 or 6 years old, 1990, 1991. I remember the biggest thing was like being able to go to a friend's house and watch 1989 Batman on a VHS tape at his house. And we were just so pumped to be able to do that. Playing Super Nintendo, Super Mario World for all up until all hours to get all 96 exits unlocked. When you went to the movies, every few months, there was something cool to go see at the movies that everybody had to go and see. I remember still going to see Independence Day. And that was like a real blockbuster everybody had to see. Men in Black. I promise not all the examples are, Will Smith movies. So those were great in the day, except for Wild Wild West. We're all going to forget about that one. I remember in 2001, summer, friends and I were hanging out at a friend's house. We were playing PlayStation, maybe two, probably still PlayStation 1. No, it was PlayStation 2, I think, by then. But at least PlayStation 1, playing a PlayStation game. And then we walked, and we were like, 16 years old? And we walked down to AMC Esplanade and saw Fast and the Furious. And we thought we were so cool. Walk in by ourselves, you know, just, you know, being able to do what we wanted. And what was great about during that time period, you know, so I've got like little kid stuff. When I was a little kid, elementary school, it was Capri Sun, skateboards, Pogs. Later on, it was Metal Gear Solid. It was, you know, different video game platforms that came out. And then just other things like being excited about like Lord of the Rings trilogy. I remember in college when Return of the King came out. I want to say, what was that, like 2005? I think it was 2005 and Return of the... Let's see. When Return King come out. I will admit I do appreciate the ability to search things better now than in the past. That came out... Oh, no, it was 2003. Yes, way different. That was the last movie I've ever waited in line for, like camping out. Now it stinks. You just... I mean, it's kind of cool. You can reserve your seat, so it's like... It takes, you know, it's easier. But there was something magical. So that was December 2003. I had just started. This is my second semester at community college. I started in the summer. This is my fall semester at community college. I just wanted to get through as quick as I could. By the way, I got a full ride to Scottsdale Community College. Thank you very much. Trying very hard here. All $600 each semester paid off. And my friends, there were a lot of friends. They were back in town. Some of them went out of state. They went to like, one of my friends went to NYU. Others went up north or south in Arizona, but we were all back in town for the winter break because we were all, it was our first fall away going off to school. And we went, and it was at AMC 24, Arizona Mills Mall. And we waited in line for 12 hours to get good seats. But it was fun. We had little seats set up. We played cards. We hung out. We bought two-hour game cards. There's a GameWorks arcade there. And we would buy these two. You had game cards you could buy that were unlimited play for 2 hours. And we'd rotate in shifts going to go play arcade games and come back, take the spot. And we made a day of it. It was like conquer. You know, it was our journey. It was our journey to Mordor. We went and did that. I actually left because it was a midnight showing, but I left at like 7 o'clock to go take a final exam for a class. And then I came back and then we went and saw the film and it was awesome. But what made those times really special? So for me, especially childhood, quote unquote, young adulthood, high school was 1999 to 03. Then I did college after that. So my college, when culture started to die, was really when I was basically out of college. Like in 2007, I graduated. So I got to have that high school and college experience in a time where you could be fun and goofy and get into adventures and do all kinds of stuff. And you didn't have to worry about it being plastered on the internet. Star Wars kid, that someone found a tape of him playing with lightsaber. That went all over the internet. That was like one of the first memes. We thought it was hilarious. But we also weren't spending all our time on our phones. Yeah, we had our phones. We would text and call. But usually your phone was just something essential for communication. And then you just hang out and you just do stuff. But you didn't have to have that fear of everyone's just on their phones and bored, or everyone's going to record everything. You're going to be embarrassed. It's going to be spread all over the internet really quickly. You didn't worry about that kind of stuff. You didn't worry about what people were going to say on social media because we weren't on social media. We were just having good times. The most drama we had was we had a thing called LiveJournal. We had MySpace too. Like, am I going to be in your top eight? But it was a novelty. LiveJournal, you would write about like, oh, this thing really bothered me. It was a little passive aggressive, but nothing like what you have today. Absolutely nothing. So we didn't have social media to distract us, algorithms trying to kill us and turn us into dead-eyed zombies. We didn't have that. And we did have something else. We had what Matt Walsh called in his episode a monoculture. So when I was growing up in the 90s and then to the early 2000s, we had a shared cultural experience. We weren't all fragmented. Nowadays, what is it that people like? Oh, people follow all kinds of trends or interests or niche things because you can just dive into a rabbit hole of that on the internet and be endlessly curious about that and never have to come up for air. People just disappear in the internet. I remember I used to do pro-life exhibits. The very first one that I took part in was in 2006. They visited my campus, Arizona State University. It was a huge kerfluffle. People were protesting and yelling. We had these graphic abortion pictures up. Now, when we try to go and set up those kind of exhibits on college campuses, nobody cares. You want to know why? They walk by on their phones. Whatever. And they've seen horrible things on their phones all the time. It doesn't shake them anymore. But it's not just the phones. It was the monoculture. We had shared movies, shared music. It was so quaint. I remember going to Sam Goody to buy CDs. Though, when was it? 2000, 2001, I remember visiting some friends. I went to visit a relative in San Diego, Coronado Island, which isn't really an island, but they're rich enough to call it that. And there, my cousin, who's 10 years older than me, showed me what LimeWire was, that you could download music for free. And I was like, no way. So that did blow my mind a little bit there. But I remember we went out and we just went and, canvassed the whole island. It was July 4th and just getting into shenanigans. I think another time we went and tried to throw 2 liters off a parking garage. If you get it to land on the cap, it'll explode and go up. It was wholesome. I wasn't perfect. Did we have things that we struggled with? Absolutely. Was there pornography? Were there social media distractions? Yes, but not the level we had now. And like I said, there was that monoculture. There would be like films. Like I said, Lord of the Rings is a great example of that coming out. We all had to go and see Lord of the Rings. We all went and saw the Star Wars prequels, even though they weren't great. We all had to go and see that. And then in the early 2000s, there were also great comedies. That's comedy kind of like died in 2010. And I think that's because of the Great Awakening, like Obama, a leftward shift. Social media amplified these loud liberal voices that would cancel people and shame others so that you couldn't, there was this instant feedback and studios were just afraid to push boundaries. Like you go back, look up, like search online, most popular comedies 2000s, right? Look at like most popular comedies 2000s. And what do you get? You get a lot of classics. You get Step Brothers, Anchorman in 2004. You get The Hangover, that's later on in like 2009, but you have some that's being created before that. You've got Dodgeball in 2004. You've got Old School being another one, though there's a lot of inappropriate things in that. There were comedy films. There were other dramas and epic creative stories. And there was television that we would all joke about. Like there, you'd want to see like who was on late night and when Conan took over, like a bunch of us were into what Conan O'Brien was doing or Jay Leno there. And the late night hosts, by the way, are not insufferable like they are now. Like in 2005, Stephen Colbert did a satire called The Colbert Report, where he played a Bill O'Reilly-esque figure mocking conservatives, but in a lighthearted way that made it fun. And then now what does Stephen Colbert do? He's got the dancing vaccine jabs and like Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert, all it is. And really what changed, I think, I mean, you had Obama in The Awakening, but I think late night really got killed by Trump. When Trump got elected, like, I think a lot of celebrities and late night people felt like they felt guilty. They treated him like a joke and they didn't do their part to prevent him from being elected. And they were like, never again. And so then it just became everything after 2016 was red and blue. Are you red or are you blue? Are you team red or team blue? And everything, even like the food places we choose to eat at, whether it's, Chick-fil-A, that was before that with the debate about so-called same-sex marriage, which of course happened in the latter end of the 2000s where things start fraying apart. I do think a lot of our cultural decay on things like so-called same-sex marriage and other stuff like that, transgenderism, I think that's directly correlated, by the way, to the dramatic rise in internet pornography usage. Now, when people fall down that rabbit hole, they're going to excuse all kinds of deviance as a result of that. But you had also just great television. Walsh gave a lot of examples of that. When I try to think of, like, you think of like TV shows people watched, like the last sitcom, like there were sitcoms throughout history that everybody watched and talked about. You go back in history, they'd be like MASH or Cheers or Friends. Like the last sitcom that was really like that, I feel like it was The Office. There are some popular sitcoms now, even ones I'm willing to give a try that I've heard. I've heard like Brooklyn Nine-Nine is good or Always Sunny in Philadelphia. But really like The Office, that was the last great sitcom where everybody was following the storylines and it was something you could talk about around the water cooler where we had that kind of monoculture. Like really, I feel like the pinnacle for me with The Office was season 5. That's when you had arcs like Michael Scott Paper Company. You have no idea how high I can fly. But I really feel like the show just went downhill after he left. And that was in season 7. That would be around like 2010, 2011. So he left around, 2011. And then the show never really recovered after Steve Carell left. And I think what's hard also, you take like comedy, for example, why do we have these difficulties here? I forget if Walsh said it in his episode or not, but let's take the comedians normally to make it out there. You worked really, really hard to get on Saturday Night Live or to get into a comedy movie. But nowadays, comedians just don't have to do that. They can just go and make a TikTok channel and make a fine living that way. and create a niche audience. So we've gone from having like celebrities. I mean, one reason you went to movies and you go watch Total Request Live. That was a fun thing in high school, in middle school and high school. So then late 90s, early 2000s, when you wanted to see a music video, you couldn't just power up your computer and watch it. There was no place to do that. If you wanted to listen to a great song, you had to catch it on the radio. Even into the 2000s, I made mixtapes, and then I eventually graduated to CDs. But I would try to catch songs on the radio and make mixtapes of them. And then eventually I got LimeWire and just stole the music, right? But if you wanted to see a music video, you can't just go to YouTube and just watch them like you can now. After school, you'd put on Total Request Live, had music in the background when you were doing some schoolwork, and there'd be music videos you wanted to see. And I do think there was more soul. I have this wonderful mega mix I've created. They made the mix originally online, and I trimmed it up a bit. And my wife and I will listen to it like when we're driving, or it's great for working out. It's very high tempo. When I listen to 80s, 90s, and early 2000s music, there is just a kind of soul that is present there. I know there was corporations involved, but the music was not churned out through a corporation. You had artists who were really trying to make something special or interesting. Yeah, obviously there are corporations that are involved in it, but it had a distinctness to it. Whereas now, when you go from like 2010 on, I know 2010, 2012 was like millennial core. We are young. There's a fire in our soul. Go big or go home. That's right. That is actually a parody of Millennial Core that Kyle Gordon does that I highly recommend. But now, gosh, the music is just, it just feels really indistinguishable for a lot of it. So I was saying earlier about celebrities. You wanted to see celebrities, you had to like tune in to catch them. But now with like social media, follow them wherever you want. It's not special. You don't go to a movie to see them. There's nothing special about that anymore. I think also food changed. Walsh did a special about the change in fast food. Part of it's related to private equity firms, but not entirely. But there is a conglomeration of food where all of the fast casual and fast food starts to taste the same after a while, and it's not good. I remember that when I ate Subway sandwiches in like 1999, I mean, my palate probably wasn't as good, but I know they tasted better back then. I knew they tasted better. So it's all is different. So I think the fracturing from the iPhone and social media. So yeah, like with celebrities, like there's a lot of celebrities out there. When I hear like, who's a celebrity? It's like, I don't even know who you're talking about. It's just somebody who has 2 million followers on TikTok or YouTube or whatever. Never heard of this person, but there will be all kinds of young people who follow them. Like, what is going on here? So we're all fragmented. That's why even though it was super annoying, I was at least okay with 6-7. I was okay with that. My kids do 6-7. They're Gen Alpha. My son, Matthew, he was doing it. And then even our littlest guy, John Paul, 6-7. He just wants to be a part. At least there was something everybody thought was interesting and went viral and was mainstream and the entire culture got in on it. Even if it was dumb, at least everybody was in on it. So I found it annoying, but I at least appreciated they had something, a communal bonding together with one another. Who knows? Maybe Gen Alpha will find a way through virality to bring back the monoculture. I don't know, but I don't think we're ever really going to be able to go back, just like we can't go back to a time without the automobile, but it does make me sad. And so for Gen Alpha and Gen Z, I was reading a thing online. They said, I saw a post and it showed, I think, a party scene from a movie from the late 90s, like a high school party. It's probably Can't Hardly Wait, I think it was the film. And they said, were parties like these real or only in films? And I'll say, my friend, they were real. Were they exactly like in films? No, they weren't over the top. But you could slowly get people together, especially more in college than high school because you have more flexibility. And if you wanted to hang out with people, you had to go. You had to get out of your house. And people would conglomerate at one person's house. If somebody was cool or their parents weren't home, we would all get over there, order some food, play video games. It wasn't a crazy fiesta, over the top thing like in a film. But I remember once we had a LAN party set up. I got two Xboxes, Halo 4x4, and playing that 49-49 last pistol shot while falling, you know, off one of the towers to take it to 50, and we all scream. Staying up late for New Year's, we all get together in one house to watch that. We're not all on our phones. That was the most important thing. Gosh, if I could just get rid of the phones. I wish I could get rid of my phone. I'm a hypocrite about that. But yeah. Go check out Matt Walsh, When Our Culture Died. I think a lot of similarities overlap. I think you'll appreciate it. And that's just my gripe and rant for the day. I hope that was interesting to you, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.